The AFEM Industry Insider is brought to you by This Is Distorted, the world's biggest producer and syndicator of electronic music programs and podcasts. For more information, go to thisisdistorted.com or at This Is Distorted on socials. On air, on demand, on brand. This is Distorted.
This is the Industry Insider from the Association of Electronic Music.
The AFEM Industry Insider.
So, where do we start? So, yes, I'm Gareth. I run a consulting business called Sonorous, but more importantly for this conversation, I co-chair the Emerging Technology Group for the Association for Electronic Music. And today we are talking AI and ethics. And we have a fantastic panel for you. Mixture of technologists, folks from the startup and technology side, artists, philosophers. So we're going to have a thoroughly exciting and interesting conversation with us, and we're glad you can join us. I think the best thing I think for us all to start off with is if everyone wouldn't mind kicking us off with a little bit of an introduction on kind of who you are, like why relevant to this conversation, help set some of the wider context before we dive into any questions. Tom, do you want to kick us off?
Thank you very much. Great pleasure to be here. I'm Tom Middleton, co-founder of White Mirror Studio. We're a sensory wellness innovation consultancy. I've come from a background in music, production, producing, touring, got burnt out, retrained as a sleep science coach and a stress management coach, and now I create content to help people with anxiety, stress, and productivity using various platforms, including integrating AI in a way that helps create more content for more people.
Fantastic. Sarah, do you want to give us the next intro?
Yes. Thank you for being here, everyone. And I'm Sarah. So I'm a music artist. That's my first activity, I guess. And I'm also a philosopher. So I'm interested in experimental philosophy of art and technology. So I'm mixing everything. So I have a background in IT too. So interested in how we think about how we make music and how we integrate philosophy and technology into the mix. So yeah, I'm just really interested in, you know, the question of AI, because obviously it's just shifting the whole paradigm of, you know, why we listen to music and why we make it in the first place. So yeah.
Awesome. Jay, will you kick us off?
Thanks very much, Gareth. My name is Jay Ahern. My background is actually from record labels. I came from PS Recordings, Domino Recordings, pivoted over towards software music instrument building, working with NI, Roland, also with Lander. And I've leveraged generative AI for music in the past, as well as analytical AI.
Pal, why don't you tell the lovely folks at home a little bit about you?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Pal Chohan. I'm VP of Audio Systems and Music at Pixalynx. We're building the next wave of AI-powered music creation tools. We are intrinsically linked with blockchain technologies and also, yeah, we want to empower fans, creators, etc., all the good stuff. Previous to that, I was at TikTok, where I led the product function in the music R&D team. We were very across pushing lots of cool new AI tech. So I've always been around music. I'm a former DJ producer as well. Always been around AI tech. Those are my passions, and I'm lucky to be working in that right now.
Awesome. Carl, last but not definitely not least.
Thanks so much, guys. Pleasure to be here. Yeah, I'm Associate Professor of Media over at University of East London and also founder and director of the Museum of Consciousness at Oxford University. And that project, we're very interested in the power of sound to change consciousness and really the artists are the ones that decide whether, you know, the typologies of these sorts of sound. I've learned a lot from Tom around this idea of functional music, sound for different purposes. And really interested in where we can take sound, you know, the future of sound. And I think that's why we're all talking about AI here.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so, I mean, in all honesty, you would have to be buried under a rock, buried somewhere near the center of the earth right now to have kind of not bumped into the fact that AI seems to be the hot topic in conversation pretty much anywhere you go in music, despite like kind of AI being pretty prevalent in a huge amount of things from a music point of view. But it this year really has captured attention. So it kind of seems AI is every single conversation right now and seems to be touching all the big music topics. But I think, you know, it's easy to dwell on maybe some of the more scary stuff. But I think, you know, given everyone's broad range of experience, like, what are the sort of standout kind of use cases and developments that you've kind of seen? What's been kind of most interesting from your point of view? And we'll keep it fairly open, and anyone's welcome to kind of jump in and field it. But maybe to kick us off, I'll pick on someone. So, Jay, why don't you kick us off?
Thanks. So my just a practical application of it, AI for music analysis was something that I found very interesting, enriched metadata, all sorts of stuff like that. Also tying those things in with biometric data for music creation and generative AI for music. I find that I use that in sort of the royalty-free content sample space, and I found it quite interesting. But I'm also kind of, rights are very much in my mind. So when people say AI right now, I'm kind of more thinking about preserving copyright.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't get far from, I mean, we're going to get into rights for sure. I mean, we're going to talk about ethics. We're going to talk about rights. It's kind of impossible in the music industry not to bump into rights at some point or other. Who else? Like, I mean, just like what, like if we've kind of covered rights, we've covered something about like, you know, kind of samples and production stuff. Sarah, what about you? Like what's been the kind of standout kind of use case and things that's piqued your interest?
Have you heard about the, I think it's the new robot that they trained and basically allows you to talk to the dead?
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, I think it's pretty recent. I think I read an article last week or something. I can't remember what the name was, but I mean, can you imagine? It's just like you can, I don't know, ask like dead artists or, yeah, just, you know, yeah, great artists, writers from the past to come back and write things. It's just like, it's kind of funny and scary. I don't know. But yeah, I just, it just caught my attention. Let's say, I don't say if it's, yeah, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but yeah, it's just, I thought it was funny.
Tom, how about you?
I find, you know, the whole topic at the moment is brilliant. It's brilliant in the sense that it's polarizing. It's a Marmite conversation. It's, you know, love it or hate it. You know, it's inevitable. And, you know, we're on a trajectory now. If you look at Moore's Law and all the tech that's being built, we're in a time where you cannot deny that Ready Player One is on the horizon and coming very fast. So what can we do as artists sort of to adapt to that? And so I'm really interested in where tech can help me create more efficiently to help, let's say, be an assistant. So there's a really interesting bit of research that's just been done by Steve Keller, who's a good friend, and he was just talking about it. It hasn't been published properly yet, but I can share a few things about it. AI as collaborator or competitor, and actually the outcome of this is that it's both. It's, you know, two sides of the same coin. We need to be able to kind of utilize it as a creative tool, but know that actually he came up with this other lovely thing, which is Maverick's Maxim. Maverick as in call sign Maverick from Top Gun. It's not the plane, it's the pilot. So let's say I'm the pilot here and we've got this incredible new piece of technology. So, you know, what can we do with it? Do we first we break it? If we think about, you know, turntablism and the turntable, who knew that this device for playing back audio would then create a whole genre, hip hop? You know, that's where we're at right now. We need to play and be open to the possibility of playing. So that's what I'm doing, you know, in the studio, in the lab. We're testing stuff, we're playing with stuff to help facilitate, to create, to spar with. And I think that for me as an artist and a content creator is the most exciting thing, is like having this new, interesting sparring partner that will throw things back at you that you've never even have thought of. And in the same way that when artists would be inspired by one another in a competitive way, we now have this AI competitor to spar with, and it throws things back that you'd literally, you know, beyond your wildest dreams and imagination. And that then drives you to strive to create more ingenious, innovative, abstract, lateral thinking content. So that's really, you know, my head is obviously beside the conversation we're going to get into on ethics and rights. I'm an excited pro AI, let's say, competitor, collaborator.
It's hard not to think that we've had some of these conversations before, right? Samplers, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, artists have taken these challenging tools and turn them into like useful tools and competitive muses, shall we say. I mean, obviously you've got like the Holly Herndon style models of like training stuff and works. I mean, literally from a technology point of view, you know, feeding it your own content and spitting out works. But yeah, it's exciting for us, but you're right. It's deeply polarizing at the same time. And I think we'll get into that as a topic as well, because I do want to try and unpack a little bit like what we all think of why that's so polarizing for so many people and what's actually driving some of that stuff. But no, that was great. Pal, why don't you jump in?
So generative AI for music and the positives of it. Look, I like to think of this from an actual use case. Look, if you're a producer, let's think about a music producer. Back in the day, when you were making a recording, lots of different people had an input on a recording. So, you know, you'd create a piece of music, you'd go into a studio, there'd be an engineer, there'd be a mixed down person, there'd be a mastering engineer, there'd be songwriters. And the modern producer today has to wear all of those hats. And, you know, even me in the studio now, like it's very hard to discipline myself and not get caught up in doing admin, you know. What you want to do when you're making music is keep, you know, you either want to be creative and just create, right? Or you want to be tweaking and making things better, right? And I think what one of the things that AI will do in a positive world for me is it will help unlock creativity. And that's not just for music producers. It will be people who have ideas in their head. How many people wander the streets and have a humming melody song in their head and are like, oh, that'd be a brilliant song. Right. But they're not music producers. They don't know how to make a song. But if we're thinking about all those people and we lower the bar for creation and we provide these voice powered AI tools where you know, I can hum in, like, I really like this melody and it goes la 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 la. And I can transfer that into a synthesizer or a bass line or something. You know, that could be like the start of a song. So I really see AI as, you know, one of the key positives is increasing creativity and unlocking creativity. Obviously, the tools can improve quality of recordings as well. It's been happening for a while. You look at all the Isotope stuff, you know, AI's been around already. You know, it's not like it hasn't been there. You look at Spotify recommendation, all of this stuff, there's AI already here. So it's, you know, for me, it's not scary. And another really cool use case I've seen of it, I've got my friend Rohan, he's got a company called Controller XYZ. They can take your voice and they can transfer it into any language. So, you know, from influencers who want to get a much wider reach, I think Mr. Beast recently changed his voice up into different dialects and it literally, he's got millions of views. It doubled for him because now people in regions who don't know English can understand what he's talking about. So it's got the power for you as a musician, a songwriter, an influencer to reach a much bigger audience. Now, all that being said, and we're going to get to this, you know, I'll finish on this. Like, there's, I really believe in the concept of yin and yang. There's a good and bad to everything, right? You know, I've talked about the good. There's also a negative side to all of this, right? We'll get on to that, and I'm not going to talk about it now, but I'm talking about the good side of things. But, you know, no doubt it needs to be handled in the right way.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, creative workflows has come up in a number of those conversations. I mean, and I think that's also in this conversation already, that separation of different use cases. I mean, AI is almost a not very helpful term right now because I think for most people, it just goes to like Terminators crushing skulls on screens as opposed to amalgamation of different technologies used for different purposes. You know, I saw he's a producer. I've forgotten his name. He's been Ocean Colour Scene, so not electronic music. So him talking about working with AI stuff called Darcy. And his point was, what the light bulb moment for him was, using this thing helped him expedite a process to get to a process that he already does, but would always take him a long time to do. And being the type of creative person he was, it was intuitive as how he would get there. So it's not a process he would deliberately go out of his way to replicate, but it allowed him to speed that up so he could spend more time, because he's on the clock and it costs money to do these things, on the stuff that really he felt added value to the records and music. And it's like, that conversation doesn't seem often to be in the narrative of things that are being discussed at the moment. Maybe we can kind of dive back in and pick up on that. But Carl, I'm really interested in your point of view from this. Like, you've got really interesting experience in terms of some of the things you've been working on and the ways you think about like AI and music and creativity. So yeah, I'd love to know your thoughts on what you've seen that's been kind of inspiring and interesting to this point.
Thanks so much. So yeah, following Sarah talking to the dead, I think the opportunity to open channels to talk to other species is something that AI is allowing. If you look at earthspecies.org, various attempts to speak to dolphins, sperm whales, you know, plant signaling. I think that AI is really, and this is probably one of the best good news stories, I think, in the space, that we may go beyond creating music for humans and actually make media and immersive experiences for other species. Why be so human-centric? And vice versa, I think that there are already experiments with mushrooms making music. So I think that sort of communication is very interesting. And more recently, I've just joined forces with a platform that's looking at dementia and Alzheimer's and how we can help those patients, including my own mum now, who's just being diagnosed with Alzheimer's, to break through that lack of being able to form new memories. And one of the best ways to do that is to allow them to go back into those music, the music of their childhood, the music when they were growing up. And there's incredible results. So combining the Museum of Consciousness artists as producers for that opportunity, I think, is a really interesting one. And yeah, I just think that as Tom says, the Ready Player One is coming, and I think, you know, it's up to us to create these good news stories around AI. I think that there is going to be a lot of disruption, and I'm really focused on the stuff that's positive in the space and that expands our consciousness and expands our hope as much as anything about what it is to be human and the subjective experience, because I think that so much will be automated, but you can't automate or outsource our subjectivity.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That on that animals and music point, and music for plants and the mushrooms thing, because I've seen the mushrooms thing before, but and music for trees, like trees making music, that sort of thing's been things in the consciousness, like what people have talked about for some time. When talking about it, do you see the application of technology in the sense of it being less intuitive for us to make music for those contexts, and actually technology help us to do that? How does the technology, I'm just fascinated, how does the technology kind of play out in that context?
I think one thing that you didn't say is just like, you know, we're talking about language, you know, animals have languages and plants have languages. We know that trees talk to each other, you know, it's just like, as humans, we're not really capable of understanding that. And I think that, you know, AI is, you know, is a great application to just expand our consciousness to actually other species. And yeah, so I think that's what you were talking about as well.
It is fascinating, right? Like, I mean, our concept of music is being challenged quite significantly by technology, and our concept of music often defaults to something that hasn't existed for very long, i.e. recorded music that you can buy and sell and make a living out of and various other things in a way that we understand it, right? And it is interesting, the idea of like sound and communication and what it's making us all think. Yeah, that's super interesting. Carl?
Just one point around John Lennon in the before he was murdered, you know, he talked about that's the end of sound. We've reached all the innovation that we're gonna have, and now we see this, you know, this completely new disruption. I think it is just the next disruption of technology, or the next disruptive technology. And for me, it's exactly that. What is sound? What is the potential of sound? And how many different ways can we change our perception and like I say, change the perception for people that aren't functioning or they're hyper functioning and they're autistic or they're ADHD or whatever it is. I think that music for mental health is huge and there's such a demand. And for me, it's the non-drug altered state. Certain people are never going to take a psychedelic. I've just come back from Sweden and their drug laws are off the charts insane, where you can actually be arrested just for intending to take drugs. You know, it's completely gone the other way.
So, okay, that's interesting. So that starts walking into a topic that like Tom got me thinking about in a different way in a prior conversation. So like this idea of like our music definition and use cases being very narrow, right? Like, I guess is what we're sort of talking about. And certainly from an artist perspective, I'm Tom, I'm going to butcher this and you get to like kind of totally say it in a more eloquent way than I'm going to do. But the idea that like functional music, we're, you know, we talk about functional music and it's almost like an other to like, you know, chart music, pop music, dance music, whatever it might be. But actually from an artist and creator's point of view, there's no reason why it should be. And in fact, we're barely touching the sides of what's possible, right? So can you elaborate a little, Tom, like on kind of like how you think about like kind of like, I don't think you even used the term functional music. You used a far better term when we were talking about it. But like, yeah, like help flesh that out for us.
Sure. So I've gone from, let's say, observing millions of people around the world positively responding to sound and vibration. And from this, let's say, you know, gathering data, looking empirically at what happens when people respond to this beautiful thing, which is, you know, sound and frequency and vibration and movement and collective enjoyment of that. Can we unpack ways of utilizing melody, harmony, rhythm and specific frequencies, specific contexts, spatialization, this lovely toolkit of sound in space right now? Spatial audio is massive. We're really, really excited about how we can intentionally use positioning of sound within space to create, let's say, specific moments to deliver neuroplasticity, to get the brain working in different ways. And once you start, you know, realizing that we're just at the, you know, the very, very beginning of this journey into the neuroscience, psychoacoustics, vibroacoustics, felt sound, pairing sound with other senses. So we're working with Johns Hopkins at the moment on intentional space design, where we're basically looking at how sound, music, felt sound works in the context of all the other senses. So we're perceiving all the time. And it's just marvelous how we're getting to a point where we can be really intentional and socially responsible about how we use these particular modalities. And obviously for me, first and foremost, it's sound and music. How can we be more intentional? How can we be more useful? Can we create experiences that are through the Trojan horse of art, perceived as something beautiful, yet actually the net positive outcome is an uplift in your mental, emotional, physiological well-being, or it's boosting productivity? So seeing sound and music as this sort of useful thing that we can then turn from entertainment sector, you know, 22 billion into this interesting other pie, which is 4.7 trillion and growing wellness sector. And I think artists have a great opportunity to be thinking about how they're utilizing their beautiful talents and skills at storytelling and taking people on sonic journeys, imparting that emotional authenticity, yet utilizing some tools and frameworks to actually deliver a positive health benefit. Is that about right?
Yeah, that was ace. That was, and way more eloquent than I even vaguely hinted at. That was, yeah, no, absolutely, like super fascinating. I guess taking us on a slightly different track, but like kind of, I guess, following on from that a little bit and being slightly provocative, I'm going to start take us down a darker path. You know, there's an explosion of startups at this point, right? Like kind of the technology is like every day someone else has raised money and bigger sums of money. And, you know, certainly in the startups and tech companies I talk to, the makeup of teams and founders is really interesting. Like, it's a mix of technologists, everyone loves music, there's musicians building stuff. It does seem that this technology is becoming increasingly accessible and increasingly easier to build. The training is, you know, big training models and stuff is very, very expensive, but like actually to start kind of, some of the use cases we're seeing with people playing around with, it's interesting to see how fast all these things are spinning up. Moober have been around a long while as a generative AI company now, or in relative terms, but you know, recently reported 100 million tracks created recently. So question for all of you, and anyone can field this one, but like, does greater uptake like point towards positive outcomes, right? Is there, and I suppose linked to that, is there enough being done to tackle the complexity? And is access to these technologies at this point equal enough? Like, is it like, are we in a place where it's only the very few? We're all very fortunate. We've all got to play around with this stuff firsthand and see it like up close and personal. But I'm interested in people's general view on that level of access and where we're at.
Gareth, you just said something. Does greater uptake result in positivity? And the first thing that popped into my mind was like crack cocaine and OxyContin. And then I had to go back on and say, No, this is different. I mean, I think greater uptake, I think that human, you know, before we get into rights and all that stuff, the creative process, you know, Humans are funny. We're conflicted in that, you know, like the electronic music world, like adapts, loves technology, you know, but at the same time too, a couple of years ago, you know, you looked like a dick if you showed up into Berghain playing with a laptop or something like that. You had to have modules. So, you know, we're kind of, humans are weird, but I like the idea of people creatively using it to, you know, that's the fun bit, to see what happens. And, you know, I think to inspire and that, but I think also that, you know, in these kind of new startups and everything that you're talking about with that, I think selling people the dream of you're going to be a star if you use this is a bit of a, is a completely false promise. I think really what you're talking about there is make music, enjoy it, see what happens. So.
Do you think that, that with that point, right? Like, I guess I'm danger of taking us down a different path, but like, yeah, I mean, that doesn't strike me as a challenge with technology, right? Like that's, seems to be a challenge that comes from elsewhere, right?
Yeah, yeah. And also technology makes it easier. Like when we did the, most of us did that conference at Brighton, we had one audience member who asked, hey, could I use AI to recreate a sample, you know, because I don't want to pay for that artist for that sample. And that was a beautiful question because it's human, it's cheeky. People use stuff in cheeky ways. But at the same time too, you've got to kind of keep it in the lane. And I think that's where we are. And also I think we're calling this whole thing like AI, but it's an ingredient in different products across a lot of different things. So maybe I've gotten off topic there, but that's my bit.
Well, look, so looping that back then. So, and I guess you touched on it, like that diversity of people using the technologies now, like one thing that stood out to me as a development over the certainly the last 12 months is the diversity, not just of people building, but the diversity of people using technology. Like I think a number of times we've, you know, talked about voice cloning and Talking to the Dead, and there's, you know, models like kind of what Grimes has done in terms of, you know, kind of, you know, creating a model of her own voice and putting it out there. There's the Weeknd and Drake stuff, which was not done in that context. It was much more done in a, what's what the American term, well, a general term around, right, fair use kind of model, or just no care of any of those sorts of considerations. But like, what do we think generally about that? Like the idea of like sound alikes using artist voices, like what's the general vibe from all of us in terms of kind of like where we see that sitting as a good thing, where the challenges are?
As an artist, I don't find that really attractive. Like I don't want to use someone else's voice to make something. And I don't want anyone to use my voice to make something. I don't really see the point of this. Like, you know, I feel like the thing that Grime did is just, yeah, I mean, you know, she's got like loads of exposure and obviously she can play with loads of stuff. I think that also it linked to that question that you were talking about before, like access to technology. You know, you've got like super rich, super exposed artists, but you know, the real question is just like, what about, you know, all the others, you know, living on planet Earth? So yeah, I don't see the point of doing this, you know. It's just I don't really know what the value is, actually. You know, I understand that, you know, we have the capacity to do it. I don't know what's the point, you know, if it's not coming from the actual human person. I don't see the point of having a song, you know. Yeah, I don't know, that's my take on it. Maybe it's just because I'm writing a new record right now and I'm just, yeah, biased, but it's just weird.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think obviously Grimes has made a master move, but she's, if you've looked at her recent song, I Wanna Be Software, you might think she's actually lost her mind. And she talks about hating nature. And I don't know whether she's just trolling us or whether she's just still in love with Elon. And she's a big fan of Neuralink and all the rest of it. But I think the key thing there is, and I agree with Sarah, I think that it's fine for people that have already made it to outsource their voice, but for all those artists that are still trying to make it. And I think that if you see the actors strike in America, a lot of people are worried, legitimately worried that they're going to be replaced by AI. But I mean, whether we're going to watch films and pay to watch films, knowing that these are not real people, that these are the likenesses of real people. I like the, you know, the idea of people that are dead now having to write in their wills that they don't want to be brought back as a hologram. Marlon Brando famously said he did want to be brought back to life as a hologram. Robbie Williams actually wrote specifically, was probably one of the first people to say, I do not want to be brought back. But I think that the problem is, as a whole, and it's interesting, me now being a professor of media, is that media is under attack. You know, it really is that we won't be able to trust anything on our screens, anything in terms of audio. And what does that mean for the future of media? Does it mean that we'll all go Luddite and abandon screens altogether and just, who knows? I think that maybe that might happen by mistake. But yeah, I think that everything will need to be encrypted for a reality encryption. We'll need to know, we'll need to have some sort of encryption to say, yeah, this is actually a legitimate piece of media. This is a deep fake. And it won't be long before we can't tell the difference.
You know, this is the philosopher Jaron Lanier, who talks a lot about, you know, the stuff. He says that, you know, the biggest threat of what we're creating right now is not that technology is going to, you know, your machines are not going to take over. It's just like, we're just going to make ourselves insane because we won't be able to make the difference between what's real and what's not. And, you know, we just start with things like this, like cloning a voice, you know, 3 seconds. Oh, what is it? Yeah, it's fun. But yeah, imagine 10 years time, like it's just, you know, the human mind can't take it. So, you know, that's the big difference with what happened, you know, with other technologies. This is new. This has never happened before. And we're just like, yeah, we are at the verge of, you know, on the verge of something very different and dangerous. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's an important point.
Pal, you brought up voice cloning before, right? I immediately started thinking about the most recent news story I could think of, which was a use case, right? Like, I mean, how scalable a use case, we can all debate, but I forget which K-pop artist, but basically translating his Korean songs into multiple languages around the world. And a couple of things stood out to me for that, right? Like, one was, like, obviously there's a use case, there's a genuine use case, right? Like, that is the thing, right? But it also made me start thinking about, like, that's a thing that existed before as well, right? Like, I mean, traditionally, like, a song sung in a foreign language will, I can't think off the top of my head, have often made their way into, like, kind of, like, other languages and been bigger hits or hits and et cetera, et cetera. But, like, talk to us a bit about voice cloning from the way, like, kind of you've been experiencing it, things you've seen, probably more from the music side of stuff, I guess.
Right now, it's still not, in my opinion, amazing, because I've been running some experiments with it. So there's different models you can do. Used to do the cloning, obviously they're getting better. So not so long ago, you needed like 3 hours of someone's voice. Recently, I've been training models with 20 minutes of someone's voice, right? So the recreation of the voice and the quality tends to be quite good now. Where it gets difficult is the phrasing. So phrasing like a human is very, very difficult to do, right? So imagine I'm sort of like, you know, we were trying to like clone some influencers from the UK, massive. I'm not going to say who they are, right? But they were like South London street, you know, and they got this kind of like, you know, like how like South London street kids talk, right? And it's very difficult to recreate their intonation, the way the delivery of the words is, how they go up and down and how they phrase what they're saying, because you do the voice cloning of that and it just doesn't sound like them. You know, the you know, word for word, yeah, you're pretty close, but I'm not saying we're not going to get there, but I think it will take a lot of clever tech and programming and just a lot of work to get to that point. However, I think like we have touched upon a few things here. Like, you know, I mentioned at the beginning about the yin and the yang, right? So, you know, translating your voice into different languages so, you know, people from India can understand what your song's about is wonderful, right, for me, because the message is getting across. I'm not a conspiracist and I don't want to take this into a conspiracist conversation, but imagine if there's a nefarious government, right, and they start cloning people and start swinging the population towards, you know, what their view is, or slandering an opponent. So like, you're always going to get bad apples and bad actors who are going to use the tech for good and the tech badly, right? So there really does need to be, like, you know, as we were talking, like my head immediately went to grass-fed beef. Human-made media, there needs to be some kind of, like, tag that is ubiquitous and universal globally that everyone agrees on. It cannot be broken, and it has to ensure that what we are creating is authentic. There's no doubt. I think that is the key thing here.
So I'm going to wheel it back to music a little bit, and I'm going to challenge that a little. But isn't, like, licensing surely is a good thing? No? Like, James Earl Jones is forever going to be the voice of Star Wars, right? The thing I thought was interesting about the James Earl Jones deal that was done a while ago was, like, his family continue to earn from James Earl Jones being Darth Vader forever, right? Like, so the thing that started me thinking was, like, licensing surely is a good thing, right? Like, parking the question of, like, should you be able to opt in or opt out of your works being copied, cloned, training data, etc. We'll come back to those. But we just had, you know, Google, who ahead of all this explosion, very publicly said, our model's so good, we're not going to release it because it would be unethical. And we've got, you know, that spun forwards. And the story that was very recent was, you know, like, now Google is in talks with Universal and Sony about licensing models for training data. So let's kind of get into that training data point. Thinking about that, like, sort of big companies being involved in that space, doing those kind of deals, do we think that is a area for sort of skepticism or positivity?
I just want to say it's damage control because, you know, it's kind of like too late. They've already have, you know, they have all the data and, you know, they've been doing what they want with it for like years. It's just like now I think that to release it, obviously, you know, it's just like it's going to explode at some point if they release that. But I feel like, I mean, it just sounds like very difficult to control at this point, you know. It's just there's so much data. But yeah, obviously, you know, it would be the basic thing to do, just like recognize, you know, who made what and who owns what. And, you know, but I don't know, it just sounds like difficult to me. But yeah, obviously it's, you know, positivism and we have to start somewhere, I guess. But yeah.
But isn't that to the regulation point we were talking about before, right? So regulation is like almost like this collective thing that happens versus what I think is notable about private business doing stuff is it's good in the sense that like stuff is actually happening. Like we're not all just talking about it anymore. Like things are starting to happen and we're not like clearly writing cease and desist letters to each other all day long, I assume, right? I don't think we're planning to start writing letters from bodies to like music consumers that tell them stuff. But like there's a difference between, I guess, private entities doing those kind of deals and setting that level and like governments and regulation doing stuff. So like, I mean, Tom, I don't know, whoever wants to wade in on a regulatory side of things?
It's a big one, right? Because you zoom out, okay, here's planet Earth, 8 billion. Who's going to start to create that sort of framework? And actually an artist that would have been lovely to sort of bring in, Brian Chanzo, BT, actually went to a congressional kind of hearing at the White House to start talking about this and putting frameworks in place. And I am positive that there are people that care about this enough and there are experts that really do care about the rights holders and how to kind of create frameworks and infrastructures globally in a way that's fair. And I think using blockchain is going to be the way forward for that, so that back to this thing of authenticity, you know, it's just at the time it's created, the ownership of that and how we can just ensure that that piece of content, the trail, if you like, goes back to one single owner and that we are fully aware of the rights of that owner at that time and then what the permissions they've given and the boundaries that have been set. And then it's down to, I think, you know, every culture is going to have nuances about, you know, how they integrate this sort of new framework for, you know, digital rights and regulating that and how to oversee it. I guess it's maybe it's time for AFEM to step up. What do you think, guys?
You know, you're talking blockchain. I mean, that was a brilliant comment, you know, too, because it's just, you can, that's a conversation in its own in terms of tracking or governance or whatever. But, you know, just kind of thinking back in terms of disruptive technologies and people using them, and let's go back to the sampler or again or whatever. I mean, it really comes down to sort of individual responsibilities, education, and precedence. Like the stuff that we talk about, like, oh, you know, the weekend thing, Universal didn't like it and they came down heavy on the person who created it. It's clumsy time. People are like, you know, damage control or, you know, but it, at the same time, structures are having to be built. So, and that kind of falls on us. I mean, it's also great that we go to our governments and say, hey, you've got to catch up on this and you've got to do this. Things can be enforced. But why do things have to be enforced? Because people are cheeky. And that's also a side of it. And some people are responsible with that. Some people don't know. Like also when you think too, just like the culture of the internet in general, like, and people making music and using creator platforms or whatever, they don't understand copyright. It's never been put forward. Now, some companies, perhaps it was not really necessary to include it in the FAQs. But the fact is that we need to take the responsibility on us.
I was just going to say, like, we are, that's when we create Web3. Like, you know, we've been hearing about it for a long time, but no one really knows what it is. That's where we are now. You know, the only way that we have is just like to go away, I think, from these big platforms and just create a new system. You know, we just need to recreate the internet, basically, you know, and just like be clearer on, you know, rights and things like that, and direct transactions. And, you know, just again, I want to quote Jaron Lanier, because he's one of the, you know, thinkers that, yeah, is the most advanced human on this planet, I think. And it's just saying, like, you know, we need to be aware of data, and, you know, data is the new capital. You know, no one cares about goods and services anymore. It's just data is, you know, that's where the money is. That's what the money is. And we need to regain something called data dignity, you know, and just we need to own our data, because, you know, that's where the future is. And yeah, so I think that, you know, it's just, that's what Web3 is, and we're creating it without really being aware of it. But yeah, blockchain is definitely, you know, a way to go, I think.
Resident Advisor put together a list of sort of, you know, a starter, primer, should we call it, for, you know, ethics and AI, from very much from an electronic leaning stance, right? And other things are happening. I mean, there's the Human Artistry campaign on the music side of things, for sure. Adobe actually launched the Content Authenticity Initiative. I mean, that's much more in the media ads. It's less inclusive of music. But I mean, that body particularly is a makeup of startups, big companies, AI models, like all the big models are part of it, et cetera, et cetera. So it does seem that there are things happening and a general interest. I mean, obviously, you've got the guy from Stability, you know, claiming that we all need to slow down, et cetera, et cetera. And we can all be skeptical or not about like what we need to do around those things. I am interested, though, whether we generally think enough is being done. I mean, it's obviously in the topic of conversation, like every conversation as we started this whole thing is all about AI. Talking about things is always a really good place to start. Do we think that enough is being done to kind of safeguard? And at this point, I guess, sorry, just to be really clear, I guess at this point, we're talking kind of like are we just talking about the output process for artists? Because we talked very much at the beginning about how the creative process for artists seems to be a place where there's a lot of positivity. There was a stat about 75% of artists, one of the big music distribution platforms did a survey, like 75% of music artists on the platform that they talk to were already using AI in some part of their process, right? So like that seems to be, you know, becoming accepted as a positive outcome. So what, you know, is enough being done at the other end? Are we really just concerned about the issues that exist for like distribution and monetization? Or is there other things from an ethical point of view, other things from a risk point of view we need to be laser focused on?
Well, I can talk on the process thing. I think that you're right. We just, you know, we think in terms of outcome, but really music is, that's not what it is. Like music is a process for the person who makes it. And, you know, I think that you talked also about time and timing. And I think that all we hear is just like making more and faster and faster. And, you know, it just, yeah, I think you're right. We just need to slow down. And, you know, I think that all the good records that have been made, they, you know, it takes time. You just like, you can't remove that process. You can't remove that thing of what it is to make music. You know, you go to studio and you go and mix your record for a week, and it's just like, you know, it's just like this maceration. It's just like, it's like wine, you know. You can't, if you make your wine and you just put it out there, it might not be as good as, you know, if you let the process, you know, just ferment or I don't know, yeah, whatever you want to call it. But I think that, you know, time is something that we need to make music, and just like, we don't need more. I mean, when you think about all the music that's been released every day on Spotify, I think 95% is never listened to. I mean, are we crazy? Or it's just, where do we want more? You know, we don't need more. So yeah, so I think time is just, you know, it's something that we systematically want to get rid of, and you know, we want more of it, but maybe we just need to slow down for a minute and just think that, you know, actually taking time to make music is a good thing. And you know, maybe it's hard, but maybe, you know, that's what makes the music even better. I don't know. So yeah, so I kind of like this idea of the process and respect as well. Like, it feels like it's something that we don't respect anymore. It's just, it doesn't have value. It's just something that we produce, and you know, it's out there. And yeah, the content. Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's not content. Music's a process, you know, for someone who writes it like me, or, you know, thousands of, yeah, all the other people, you know, just enjoying writing music and mixing it and just like experimenting with things and struggling. And, you know, struggle is the base of what music is, I think, and cinema and writing. And, you know, it's just, yeah. So I don't think we should remove that thing from the process, but yeah, that's my take on it.
Could I just maybe add that, what if those that are disabled are now enabled, so that it becomes more inclusive and accessible? Just to sort of put that spin on it, I mean, to me, I sort of see things like Doobler by Vocalear, which is an incredible piece of technology. It's literally turning your voice into any instrument you can think of, and then removes, you don't need these anymore. And obviously we've got integrate that with ChatGPT or in a bot. Wonderful. Someone that can literally only use their voice can now become part of a community and create art. That to me is wonderful, and should be celebrated, encouraged, and invested in, from my perspective. But I totally get exactly what you're saying. There is a process to that. But what if that new process that enables those that previously weren't allowed in, you know, the barrier to entry was that they were disabled, they're now enabled?
I think that's a different, you know, perspective on it. You know, obviously it has good sight for that kind of stuff too.
I think both Sarah and Tom are touching on something really important here. And I think it's, for me, it's the innovation in terms of the context change, not so much the content. We've got tons of content. I think it's the way we hear that content that will change. I think it's these hearables. Obviously we've got a lot of innovation in the visual spectrum, but in terms of hearables, like the idea that you may be listening to your own brain waves through an EEG headset, and you're hearing a lot of hectic sound, but then you start to calm down and you create that feedback loop where you're literally, you know, the orchestra is you. And I think that those sorts of things where we can really innovate in terms of how we're hearing, whether it's, as Tom mentioned, in spatial innovation, directional sound, I think there's so much more innovation there. And I think Sarah's right that the process is so important for the musician. That can never go away, because that's why we do it, right?
Yeah, that's super, super interesting. Like, different types of listening. Tom, you just shared, and you shared it before the talk, but like the news story that was fairly recent, I think, wasn't it? About the Pink Floyd song that was recreated. Like, talk us through that, because I think that starts to pull us in this direction of like these outlier cases that are fascinating for like very different ways of thinking about what this technology can do and where we may be going.
Well, this sort of touches on what Carl was saying, actually, in that, let's say, someone's deeply ingrained emotional memories in the memory bank that are maybe inaccessible now, through decoding, or let's say priming a patient with types of music, can maybe unlock a neural pathway that was previously blocked. And in this bit of research that's just recently been published, being played Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall exposure, I think it was like 3-4 times, the net result being that someone was able to then decode the brain waves, so that memory, if you like, was then reimagined, and the sound of it is, it's not far off. I mean, you can clearly hear All Another Brick in the Wall when you listen to this brainwave that's been decoded. And if that's an application of this sort of technology that potentially could unlock generations of individuals that previously have been sort of blocked in these, these silos through using this technology, that's an extraordinary breakthrough.
Yeah, because music is emotions, right? It's just like, you know, it's the basic of what, you know, how we function as humans. So that's why, you know, we can't remove that component from the art, you know, the human is just, it has to be at the core of it, I think. And, you know, it's just, it's fascinating to see that we only starting to understand that, like, you know, how music just like plays a role on our body as well. And yeah.
Like 100%, right? Like, I think we'd all intuitively know that, like, music affects us emotionally, and that's like a key part of why everyone like experience of music. But fascinating to the point that, like, I get not how little is probably dismissive, because people probably have done many things to think about like how that kind of works and functions, but like we're suddenly opening up ways to think about like that, or I guess be able to either visualize it or use it or find ways to do things with it. There's a startup that I know very well that effectively like an emotionality index for like thinking about music. And what's also very interesting about that path is like you bump into ethics really fast if you start going down that path and thinking about, okay, well, if you can understand the emotionality of music and you could do things with that emotionality of music, what would you want to do? And you very rapidly get to a point where you go, I don't want to sell people like tissues because they're sad or stuff like that. That seems really reductive, right? Like, where are these things you could do that would change things for people? Again, thinking about another AI, Darcy were an AI generative startup, went through Abbey Red, but like when they were doing the kind of sort of graduation sort of thing through the Abbey Red program, they told a story and they brought an artist in and she's got some form of neural processing. So not ADHD, but it's a variant of, and music making as a process for her was very hard to focus and do and get done. She's part of the Brit School. Like Darcy managed to help pull them, like Darcy using the technology was able to help her complete songs and do things. I mean, she was, and it was really interesting watching her talk about her experience, right? And it very much plugs into what like Tom Carl are talking about, that idea of like, even not like what we would call people that are very, very strongly blocked because of maybe some more physical impairment from being able to make music, like even people much closer, like, or less, more invisible to like maybe not being able to be creative in that sense, suddenly potentially have access to all sorts of things that from a creative point of view, that's interesting. I'm going to start wrapping us up and sort of bringing us probably to a close, but like I also invite you all to like throw things in the mix if there's other things you want to kind of get into and talk about as we close, but I'll probably keep it fairly broad and open. And I'm kind of thinking now, like, We've covered a lot of topics. We've covered rights. We've covered the need for artists and creators to be able to kind of police their, I guess, their works, both on output and kind of how their works are used and trained. We've covered a lot of the potential for technology to do different things and for workflows for artists. We've covered a really wide breadth, but I guess kind of while we start thinking about closing, I'm interested from any of you as to kind of messages you'd want to get out. Like, I think, you know, if you were trying to round this conversation out and close on something that you felt was like, you know, the really important thing for people to be left with and thinking of, what would it be? And open to the floor.
So for me, there's two key things here. Obviously, we've touched on the human being centric to the creation of AI and making sure that any sort of creations are human verified. But for me, like, you know, as we're talking about music, I think back in the day, you know, like all the big labels, they'd have their own desk that they'd build, and every desk at a record studio or record label would have its own sound. And I would love for us to use this tech thinking about keeping originality in there somehow. So I don't know how that looks, but maybe different models, you can make them yourselves. And, you know, you can put your own slant on them. So keeping originality is key. And also the other thing is oversaturation, right? With all this stuff, there's so much music going on to SoundCloud and Spotify now. Like, I'm not saying there shouldn't be that much music, but do we need to think about some hoops or something that you need to jump through before getting your music onto these DSPs? Because For me, it's screwing music production in the scene and devaluing music, like so much music. And it's just going to get worse, right? So everyone complains about music being worth so little. We're building a whole fleet of tools that are essentially going to create loads more music. So ethically, as a music producer myself, in my head, I've always got the thing like, how do we stop the oversaturation, or how do we vet the music so like those people who really are stars and deserve to eat from this game, eat from this game? Because there's so many talented people I know who've fallen by the wayside and given up on music. And I would hate for this just to sort of make that an even bigger problem, because we want to encourage creativity and we want to encourage music, and that should be the core of what we're trying to do, right?
It's an argument for gatekeepers again, but also I think that the joy of just making music, of a process in of itself being open to everyone, is wonderful, but expectations need to be managed. It's not necessary. Was it like Keith Fullerton Whitman, the artist I quite like? I think he said, like, whenever you record 10, you know, just dump the first 10 hours, then start, you know. And so I think, yeah, responsibility. I don't know.
So a couple of final thoughts from me. I think, you know, we can't predict the future, but we can invent it. And it is up to us, I think, to do that. And I think that, you know, the rise of old media, I mean, vinyl is firmly back. CDs are dead. So there's not necessarily a linear progression in this space. And I think that's really important to hold on to. And I love the fact that musicians, when we could record music for the first time, didn't want it recorded because people thought they wouldn't come into their live shows. And now how things change. So for me, you know, there's a lot to be positive about. I think that these things can be really incredible unlockers, assistants, but we don't want to replace our imaginations. We don't want to outsource everything to the machine, because the soul is lost if that's the case. And I think also, you know, Tom touched on the wellness industry. You know, the wellness industry is rapidly eating everything else, but there's so much pseudoscience in that space. And I think that we really need, yeah, we just need quality controls. And again, that's down to us.
I like what you said, Paul, as well, about language and, you know, the fact that it's very difficult to create, you know, human-like language. And I think that it's a great thing. You know, it's just like, it's amazing that I think that robots will never be able to do that, reproduce like sarcasm and humor. And, you know, it's just that, because that's what the beauty of language is, and translation as well. Like, you know, if you think about a song like My Way, you know, it's just like the original was French song, and you know, the translation is completely different, but you know, it's just, there's the human component, and it was intentionally not translated the same way, so it keeps like, it's got something, but you know, it's just like, yeah. So I find this language thing very interesting, and yeah, in general, I think that, you know, everything that's happening right now is just, it's also amazing in the sense that it makes us question, what does it mean to be human? You know, because we're really challenged in the way we exist and we make things and why we're here. And, you know, it's just, yeah, this huge potential of danger and possibility. And yeah, I think that it's amazing that we get to talk about those questions and philosophical things, and we don't do it enough, I think. I think we sort of forgot. And I think that, you know, everything that's happening right now just kind of like forces us into it. Yeah, so I think, you know, I'm enjoying it, and yeah, so we'll see what happens. I think that we don't really know, and we can't really predict how it's going to be shaped. Yeah, we'll see how it goes, I guess. But yeah, it's great to have this kind of conversations.
I've got a bonus question from the audience. Out of all the AI music creation platforms and tools that you've come across, everyone's single favorite. You have to choose your favorite child. I'll do mine. There is a tool called Neurotone. What's fascinating, Japanese company, like they're a lab, they're building lots of different things. But what was fascinating to me about Neurotone and really turned my head was a lot of the technology, signal processing technology that we all deal with in DAWs and, you know, Ableton and whatever else since, is kind of hidden, but is an integral part of AI music conversations, really. But it's hidden technology. And what was fascinating, they built a VST plugin that would allow you to basically train a model on any like various parameters and then wrap it in a VST so you could easily pull it into your workload. And I thought that's the stuff that's really interesting, right? Like hide all the, as much of the tech as possible, give people access to tools that in skins they know, and unlock creativity, right? So that's mine, but I'm opening the floor. Let's go with Jay. Let's have your first and favorite.
I'm not going to go with a favorite. I'm just going to go with something that I thought was really interesting. Like stems in electronic music we've dealt with for years, but it was really interesting because, I mean, I kind of, like I said, Domino, I came up through indie rock as well. It was really interesting when Audio Shake got on the radar of the indie rock labels and they realized, oh, we can demix stuff. And just on a personal note, as someone who back in the 90s used to mix direct to DAT and I could never access that stuff again, I kind of liked the idea of Audio Shake being able to break stuff down. There's more profound ones I could mention, but sometimes
they're really good plethora of use cases, right? They keep coming out more and more use cases. Yeah, no, Audio Shake's amazing. All right, let's go. Sarah, what's your favorite one?
I'm going to be old school. I'm just not really using any of it. I'm sorry to disappoint, but I'm just like going like literally the other way. I'm interested in thinking about it and just hearing about it. But when it comes to write music, it's just like, it gives me, I don't know, it's just kind of repulse me now. And so I've got like two guitars here and I'm making a record just like without internet and just with two guitars. So that's kind of like a new challenge, but yeah, that's where I'm at. So that's it.
I like it. Very good. Pal, give us yours.
The Chorus platform being built by Pixelinks that my team have been putting together, which really lowers the bar for creation. We work with up-and-coming artists, producers. We're helping them monetize, make money from what we're doing through AI. And we also help fans connect with artists through being able to remix the content from their favorite artists and stuff. So I think we're thinking about it ethically, fun and easy to use, pretty cool tool. Check it out.
Awesome. Carl?
I think not really a production tool, but WavePaths is super interesting. I do a lot of work in the psychedelic space, and I really think personalization is so important. So the ability to have music made for a psychedelic journey is super interesting, and I think there's lots of competitors coming, but they were sort of first in the space, and I know Brian Eno was backing it, so that always helps.
Certainly does. And Tom, last but not least, you've given us a few already, but now you've got to pick one.
Well, yeah, it has to be Vocalia Doubler, just because it's, you know, it's inclusive, it's expansive, it's inspiring, and for people like me that trained on a cello and piano that lost that, and all we can use now is things like a mouse. Suddenly, I'm able to do things that I, you know, to perform music again in a way that was previously possible when I was a bit more virtuoso with a stringed instrument, but now I can just use my mouth.
Yeah, it's a very cool piece of tech. And again, very accessible, right? Like, it's sort of very clever technology, very powering, but very much wrapped in a form factor that's kind of very accessible and familiar, right? So yeah, no, super interesting. Well, look, that brings us to the end. I just want to thank you all. It's been a really fascinating conversation. I'm glad we got to do this again, like the remix of Brighton for BMC. So this was a fascinating conversation. We covered a whole bunch of different stuff. So it just shows how much it's moved on in only a couple of months. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to everyone who participated, questions, and all of you listening in. Yeah, let's see when we get together in however many months' time, how different the world is again. Cheers, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Association for Electronic Music podcast. We're the independent, not-for-profit, democratically run global trade association representing electronic music, culture, and businesses. The AFEM team works in a way which reflects, promotes, and preserves the best of electronic music culture and brings members together as a community to solve issues and ensure a vibrant and successful future for our ecosystem. We've got over 270 members in 25 countries across all key industry verticals, from artists to managers, labels to lawyers, publicists to therapists, technology startups, and everyone in between. This year, we've welcomed major partners to the association, such as Ticketmaster, TikTok, and Ultra Records, as well as smaller independent companies like the label BIP Records and Secret Inspirer, who is a holistic health consultant and healing nutritionist, just as an example of how broad our membership base is. Our members get access to networking events, and we create panels and discussions exploring the issues that impact the music industry. So, for example, this year we've curated panels with AFEM members covering AI's impact on the music industry at Brighton Music Conference, the agent promoter dynamic and gender equity at the International Music Summit in Ibiza, and they've explained how to get paid when you get played at Zurich Music Week. Coming up this autumn, we will be at the Amsterdam Dance Event, ADE, Future Music 4 in Barcelona, and Most Wanted Music in Berlin. So please email membership@afam.org.net if you're a member and would like to collaborate with us on these conferences and meet up. The other component of what we do is around education and best practice across the electronic music industry. To this end, we have a newly formed education working group, and this year so far, TikTok have hosted sessions on best practice for using the platform, Tonic have hosted a session on peer support within the music industry, and our metadata working group has produced two workshops on metadata, one of which is aimed at artists and is available on now on our YouTube channel. AFAM members get exclusive access to AFAM networking events, member meetings, and invites to conference panels. We can also offer discounts for you and your staff to international and domestic conferences, events, and services provided by our affiliate members and industry partners. You can get exclusive content via members-only area on our website, including industry reports and the latest intelligence relating to our sector, provided by our partners and members, as well as being able to contact fellow members for business opportunities through the membership directory. All of our members have the opportunity to join our working groups, which help shape industry-wide initiatives and promote best practice across the sector. Previous examples of this have been the Get Played, Get Paid initiative, which promotes education around music recognition technology in CMOs. And this year, we'll be launching a campaign to raise awareness around crediting producers, primarily through social media. So stay tuned on that for more information via our socials and our LinkedIn. For more information on how to become a member of AFAM, or indeed if you're an existing member and have an idea for an event, panel, workshop, or podcast, please email membership@afam.org.net. Thanks for listening.
The Association for Electronic Music presents
Industry Insider.